Hey, David.
By way of housekeeping, we'll only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can sign up for emails or listen to previously recorded meetings on our website at simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the serenity prayer. God,
grant me a
serenity
to accept the things I cannot
change,
courage
to change the things I can,
and
the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. I'm not going to interview you. Is there anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety? Yes, sir.
Aaron, welcome.
Anybody else? All right. On Zoom, you can raise your hand. Someone will chat with you. Let's see. At this time, please silence your cell phones. And I'm going to do it because I'll pretend that I can remember to do it. And then I won't remember to do it. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that the book Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism based on simple actions. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The AA preamble says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step four, part two. Please welcome our panel tonight. We have Mark and Grant. So I'm not going to read you to death. Last week, we did resentments. Tonight, we're going to do fear and sex. Step four says, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So we'll start tonight, paragraph on page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. I neglected to find out who wants to go first.
Let me start and we'll switch.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to do a little flip-flop just a minute.
As you like.
I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grant.
I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you, as always, for letting me speak here. This is my home group, Simple Actions. My sobriety date is March 19th of 2010. And gratefully, I've been blessed with one white chip and continuous sobriety ever since. I share that just because I want people to know that you don't have to keep drinking to get sober. And if you have to keep drinking to get sober, then my hat's off to you. Hopefully you get here and stay here. I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous a solution for a problem that I didn't know I had, and amongst a group of fellows that I didn't know I needed. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I won't lie to you, I was not convinced that I didn't have fear. I've heard lots of inventories and lots of people say, I'm not afraid of anything. Well, I had lots of things I was afraid of. I had lots of things that I didn't want to admit that I was afraid of. You know, I was very much afraid of spiders when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was very much afraid of spiders my whole life. So I wasn't, you know, delusional about the fact that I was afraid of spiders, but I was delusional about the fact that I was afraid of relationships. I was delusional about the fact that I was afraid of just about every work encounter I had. I was delusional about just about everything I did on any given day that looked frightening. You know, like that person's a little bit bigger than me. Well, I'm going to make myself look tougher and meaner than him so I don't have to be afraid of him. I have tattoos that are in many ways symbols of my attempt to be courageous through fear, right? And they're not. Let me just put that out there. They're not. They were attempts at being bold and brave when really just a scared little. And I heard, I mean, I'm just stealing this line. Like, I didn't make this up. I heard the speaker one time just talk about, like, deep down inside, everywhere I went as a scared little boy. And I had to make myself seem like a man or a demon or some kind of scary creature that could hide that scared little boy deep down inside. And it was through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that I started to really uncover the truth about. And because of that, I have fear today, but I'm not paralyzed by it. And if you've ever been paralyzed by fear, you know that sense of like somebody asks you to do something and you freeze, you get real rigid, hair on the back of your neck stands up. I get that. Like, I get that when my wife asks me questions that seem tough sometimes, right? Like, that is not gone from me. I still have it today. Thank goodness I have it. And that solution is God. And it says in the book, like the like really great line in the book, it's like, we grow through fear. Like, I learned to grow through fear, that it doesn't just go away, but like I have these experiences where fear comes to me and I talk to another man about the fear. And I talk to him about, what am I really afraid of? It's not that I'm afraid that I'm going to be busted at work. It's not about I'm afraid that my wife's going to catch me in a lie. It's about I'm afraid of looking bad, right? I want to look good all the time. I want to look like I pay all the bills and win all the awards. And the truth is I don't always win all the awards or pay all the bills. You know, I make lots of mistakes. And it's coming to understand that making mistakes and then going back to people I made mistakes with that have caused them harm, that I can make it right, that I start to grow through fear. And so then the next time it happens, I can stand eye to eye with the next person and say, you know, I'm not particularly good at handling this situation. So let's see if we can come up with a solution or a course to go through it together. My kids are a great example. My kids come to me with stuff or come at me with stuff. And like, I tense up with fear. And my reaction to them is to be like, step back, you're gonna get it. And the reality is I need to pause and ask God for some direction and a willingness to understand where they're coming from. And maybe I can help them, because a lot of times when they're coming at me with things, they're afraid, right? And a lot of times it's fear that I had, fear that the world is too big, the fear is fear that people are out to get me, fear that people are going to take advantage of me. And I was trying to think of a really, like, you know, really salient example of this. And I have them every day. And like just this past weekend, I got really full of fear on Saturday morning. Okay. Because 2 days earlier, I had checked with my wife, got to check with the boss, checked with my wife to make sure that an AA commitment that came available, we could go do, or at least I could do. And if she was available, she could come along. And she's in the program. And she's like, yeah, yeah, that sounds great. We should be free at that time that day. And then Saturday morning came and one of the kids had a soccer game and she was going to be at the soccer game. And I'm like, that's fine. But she's now upset, because I'm not going to be at the soccer game, right? Supporting the soccer game. And I said, well, we made this commitment and I'm going to show up to it. And if you need to be at soccer game, that's fine. And through that, we started to have a conversation and we figured out how we're going to navigate it, how we're going to get there. And I started to understand that she wasn't even concerned with me being at the soccer game. She just wanted to figure out how we were going to navigate transportation because we're down a car this weekend, right? And so the fear wasn't even what I was afraid of. Like what I thought I was afraid of wasn't even real. It had nothing to do with anything. And by just taking the time to understand what she was afraid of and what was going on with her, we sorted it out, right? When I was drinking, you come at me with something like that, I'm out, I'm running, I'm leaving. Like, I'm not just like running to drink. I'm just leaving the house. I'm gonna throw a tantrum and leave the house and then probably get drunk and then probably end up somewhere I'm not supposed to be in some other trouble, right? Like taking advantage of a colleague or a friend or a coworker, you know, which we'll get to when we get to the sex part, right? Because I'm just as bad in that area as I am with fear. And thank goodness that this program has a way of living, right? Like I need this. Like, I don't know about everybody else. I really need a way of living that solves these problems because I can't solve them. I thought I could, and I used to fight about it and kick and scream and cause chaos and ruckus. Cause like was talked about last week, once I get enough of this fear in me, I start to build up a reason to want to fight everybody. I build up these resentments and I'm going to survive by powering up with resentment. And it's not, none of it's real. It's, and it ruins all the relationships in my life.
Man, that's a lot to follow. I don't even remember half of it, but I want to say it all. My name is Mark. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Mark.
Let's see. My sobriety date is November 24th, 2015. Anniversary is around the corner here. When I've done the inventories twice, right? The first time I did the inventories with the first sponsor, I did them as best I could with him. But some of it, I was resistant to a lot of things. And when it came to the fear thing, I'm like, I ain't afraid of nothing, right? And I understood fear in the sense of, you know, trying to prevent you from taking something from you, you know, me losing something. But, you know, the rest of the stuff, you know, somebody kicking my behind, almost cussed, kicking my behind. I'm quite sure every last one of y'all here can do it, but I don't fear because somebody's already popped that chair. You know, once something's happened once, it's just not gonna, I just don't have a fear of it. It's already happened. Losing a child, that's already happened. You know, a parent has passed away, that's already happened. So, you know, those things, once it's occurred in my life, I don't have a reason to be afraid of it the way I look at it, right? And that works for me. It may not work for anybody else, but that works for me. But the second time I went through the inventory with my current sponsor, you know, I took it different, right? First time I was just like, I'm gonna write all this stuff out. And somebody's gonna finally tell me how right I was the whole time around, right? That's the way I approached the first inventory, you know, the resentment, anger stuff, the sex stuff. You know, I was right about everything. Second time I took, you know, it was a whole different approach, right? I had more time under my belt. Somebody was really deep into the book, so it was a whole different approach on it. And so when I get to doing the fear stuff, you know, here's what I've come to grasp and understand. And it drives everything else that I've done is that I got this fear of being alone. But I didn't know that. I had no idea about that, right? But when I go back to when a majority of my bad behavior start, you know, when I come up here in the Navy, there's a lot of stuff before that. But, you know, when I get up here in the Navy, when I leave Florida, I join the Navy, I end up here, I had no reason to be married. But I wanted somebody up here with me. And so... Trisha had two kids and Vicky had one on the way. So it came back to, you know, which one's going to cost me more, fear me losing money, right? So I married the one that had two kids. When I sit back and I look at, you know, why, when I get really into it, did I love one more than the other? No, I was cheating on both of them, right? But I didn't want to be up here alone. And instead of, you know, seeking somebody up out here, up here, I brought somebody up here, right? So I didn't have to be alone. Then, because I get a fear of being alone, I'm always looking for the next person to be there in case that one leaves, right? So that all the bad behavior, all the cheating on the wives and the girlfriends and all that stuff, it all comes back to just, I don't want to be alone. And I have this fear of being alone because my bad behavior keeps going on. It always puts me in a position where I'm going to be alone, right? And so I keep doing the same thing over and over again, and then blaming, you know, ex-wife one, two, and three, right? They didn't act right. You know, they're dealing with a guy who spends most of his time drinking somewhere else, not wanting to be home because he was looking to make sure somebody's ready in case that one left, right? So when I look at everything else I've done, it all comes back to, you know, that. I remember there was this one lady I wanted to date, and I was not married at the time. And she was like, no. And I'm like, why? And she's like, you need to, you know, be alone. You need to learn how to be alone. And at the time, I had my townhouse. I didn't have my kids. My townhouse was just like a, you know, frat house, really. I didn't lock my door. People were in and out of it all the time. And it was guys and gals. And there was just always a party going on. There was always a drunk fest going on. And she's like, when you learn how to be by yourself, you know, maybe we can talk. And I was like, okay, I'll get rid of all the girls. This is what I'm thinking in my head. And I told everybody, you know, no more ladies. And then I called her up and was like, okay, yeah, after a week of no ladies around, I'm like, okay, all the ladies are gone, just me and, you know. And she's like, no, you need to be alone, right? And I was just like, you're just being difficult. And I moved on to the next woman, right? But when I sit back and evaluate myself now, knowing that fact about myself, that I have this fear of being alone, I sit back and go, that woman saw it all them years ago. I had no idea, but she saw it, right? And so where am I at? Yeah. Well, I must just say, because I ain't gonna keep going on about that. Just everything that I've done, it goes back to that fear. Now, I don't know where I get that fear from. Technically, I've never been alone a day in my life. You know, I'm the oldest child, but I got an older cousin, so we grew up together. So I was never alone in that respect. Joined the Navy, you're never alone in the Navy. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you don't want to be alone, you know, even if you want to be alone, you're never alone. There's always somebody around. You're always in a ship somewhere. You always got people coming around. If you kind of got to drink the way I drink, there's always drinking guys that want to be around. So you're never alone, right? And then I've always had a girlfriend, and I've always had a wife, and there's always just something there. But it all goes back to I'm setting my life up so that I'm not alone. I don't know where that comes from. I have no idea where that comes from, but I know that it has ruled my life, you know, for as long as I've been alive, as far as, all right, but that's enough of that.
Thank you both. Thanks, Mark. We're going to continue on page 68. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so. For we're now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with surrender? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Grant?
Well, I'm going first this time.
Attaboy.
So, the majority of my life, just about all of it, I was atheist. Well, I was told I was atheist based on my behaviors. I was cool with the idea of going to hell. All that stuff didn't bother me, right? So I was atheist. And in, I think it was 2012, I was working a project in East St. Louis. It was a Wednesday. I was on Scott Air Force Base. I finished the day, and I was at the hotel at the bar drinking my dinner, watching the news. And some people went in a church on Wednesday night and robbed the people during church service, right? It was on the news. And I pushed back from the bar, careful not to knock my beer over. And I said, God's going to get you, God. And then I'm like, where did that come from? I don't believe in God, right? And, you know, this is one of the times I had time to think about that statement. And at that time, I realized that I'm not truly an atheist. You know, in the big book, it says very few people are. Deep down inside every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. I wasn't truly atheist. I just didn't care. God stay on his side of the street. I stay on my side of the street. We ain't got to bother with each other. That's the attitude that I truly had, right? And I acknowledged it at that moment. And when I finally ended up in AA, I think that was the perfect attitude for me, because I was no longer fighting it one way or the other. I was open to hear stuff, right? Before that, I was ready for the argument of why there is no such thing or why it's not good or whatever. I came to A not caring, neutral. And so I was ready to hear stuff. And then you guys didn't say I had to believe in a God. You guys didn't say I had to believe in a specific thing. You just said I had to find something that was bigger than me that I was willing to live with. In the beginning, I selected the Flying Spaghetti Monster. That was my first one. And then after about a month or two with that, I decided, okay, I'm not really taking this serious. So I decided to do the higher power thing. My first 3 years, I said higher power. I wasn't going to say God. In those first 3 years, though, that first sponsor and his wife, they helped me separate my real problem, which is I got a problem with religion. And in most people's minds, when you say God, they think religion. They're wondering what religion are you, what denomination are you? And so those two things had to be separated for me. And, you know, with the help of, you know, everybody in these rooms, you know, I was able to separate out that, you know, those are two distinct things. And I still have issues with religion today. You know, going to church in a religious ceremony, I literally feel like I'm a burst into flames. Mm. But sitting in this room here for AA is comfortable for me, right? So I avoid any kind of religious ceremonies. Then you guys tell me some prayers that are written in the book. I hear you say them in the rooms. I did not come to AA with knowledge of any prayers. I didn't know any, never bothered to try and learn any because I never was going to church. And so, but luckily the big book gave me directions. It's like, here are the prayers that you need to say in the morning, in the evening. Here's one in case you're angry. Here's one, you know, in case you, you know, you want to, you know, help somebody else, whatever they are. They're all in the big book, directions on how to do that. And so what I had to work on first was faith, right? And faith is just some kind of belief that something is out there. And I'm willing to accept that there's something out there. And I say God now just because it's easier. Most people go, they go from not saying it to higher power to God just because it just gets easier after a while. And that's what I did. And so I worked on that faith thing. And that's just, for me, following the examples of the people who are before me in these rooms and then working on it myself. My current sponsor, he hammers me about, you know, prayer and meditation. That's how I connect my head to my heart, right? Mm-hmm. Prayer and meditation. So he does that and I work on that, right? But what I had to find out after that was not only did I have to have faith, but I had to have trust, right? And those are two different things in itself. Because I can talk about faith all along. It's a feeling, really. It's a belief that, you know, something is there that's going to do something. Do I trust it? My first experience of trying to trust it was when I first got in the rooms, and I suspect a lot of people when they first come in the rooms, they want to get somebody they love sober, and so they want to bring them in. For me, that was my youngest daughter. My oldest son died from this disease. And my youngest daughter, it's like she picked up the baton and said, I'm going to run the race for you. So I'm coming to meetings, I'm dragging her with me, I'm calling her, talking about A and all this stuff. And then after a while, you know, she doesn't answer the phone as much and she starts saying no to meetings. And so I'm talking to my first sponsor about that. And he's like, you know, leave her alone, you know? And he's like, he said that. And I'm like, so you're asking me to let my daughter die, as I said it. That was a whole lot more dramatic than that, some cuss words. But that's what I said. And he said, no, I'm asking you to trust that God will take care of her, right? Up until that point, you know, you guys have been right about everything else. And so I decided to just trust that the God will take care of her. And I stopped bothering her about AA. Surprisingly, in the last 3 years, she's not gotten into any more alcohol-related incidents. So that's more evidence for me to continue believing that there's something out there that's doing something. I don't know what it is, but it's doing something. And it wasn't me forcing her into this. And she's still not a member of us, and she may never need to be a member of us. But I had to learn that faith and trust in God. Somebody described it to me one time as the faith and trust is you go watch this guy walk across a high wire at a circus or the chair that you sit in. You have faith that it can hold your weight, or you have faith that guy can walk across that high wire because you watched him do it a few times. That guy puts a wheelbarrow up there and trusts you getting in that wheelbarrow. and letting him push you across. Mm-hmm. You already got faith. You've seen him do it, but do you trust him? When you sit in that chair, that's trust. You had faith that it would hold you, but it took trust, that action to sit in there and let it, you know, confirm that it works. And so, yeah, that's it. I'm through.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks, man. Yeah, no. So as Mark was sharing in about how many times it just your chest gets tight, your abdomen gets tight, and alcohol fixing. I'm coming out of work late at night. Because I used to work in food service for a long time. Come out of work late at night and I'm going to make happy hour. But I'm a little tense from work, but I'm also a little tense and I'm not going to get to drink like I want to drink. And so I'm real irritable. So somebody asks me a question, I'm real short with them. I'm real irritable. I'm unfriendly. And I'm mean to the waitress in the bar because like I need a drink now. But then I get a couple drinks and that releases and I ease up a little bit, a couple more drinks and I'm good to go. And that's what I'm looking for when I get here is I need something that takes the edge off, lets me release and get free of how tight I am about all of these things. And I didn't want God. I love that Mark shared that. I did my homework. I went to a prep school. You know, I sat through all the Jesuit classes. I went and got my minor in philosophy. I sat in the quad with all my classmates and we philosophized about the unnecessary need to believe in God. I figured out all of what you didn't need to know about God and how useless and a waste of time that was. And how, when I came here, I had to finally admit that I was lacking something that I needed real, real bad. And, I remember my first sponsor, we were just going into step two. You know, can you believe, or are you now willing to believe the power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity? And I said no. And he said, well, I just want you to think about it. Think about it for a little while. And let's meet in a week and then make a decision. Because if you really believe that, that's all we have to offer here. And I don't know if I can help you if you're not capable of believing that. And I like there's a line somewhere in the book, like the wall, like the cell slammed all closed in all around me. And then I was in hell. And that's how I felt for a week. I never felt so lost, alone, and in trouble than in that little week thinking about that idea. And I came back to him and I said, yeah, I think I'm willing to believe. And I like what Mark also shared, because like it's taken time to build trust. And most of my trust in God today has grown through learning to build trust with my family, build trust with my coworkers, build trust with my sponsor, that in being able to be vulnerable with the people I care about most, that I've built that trust. And in doing so, I've learned to trust that God is. I was really afraid, like next to that fear that I was not going to find, that God wasn't going to be available to me because I had turned away from God for so long. That when I had to finally make amends to my mom, because my dad died while I was still drinking, and he died suddenly. To make the long story relatively short, because I can make it real long, as we all know, we can make stories long. So my mom was out of town when it happened, and she came back to town, and my uncle and I had decided that to see my dad in that state would just be devastating. Unbeknownst to me, because I was drunk, I took away from my mom her last opportunity to make peace with my dad, because she wasn't in town when it happened. Didn't even occur to me that that might be an important feature to their relationship. And I took that, and I was afraid to make that. I didn't see any way to make that. I get worked up about this story because this is when I knew God was there the whole time. Because I sat down and held my mom's hand and I told her I understood what I did to her, what I took from her in that moment, and that I would do anything to make it right. And this sense of peace fell over the room. Not just me. I could feel it in her. And that's when I knew God was there the whole time. That it was only me who was turning away from God. who had made a decision my whole life that because God didn't show up like Santa Claus when I prayed and give me money, show up like Santa Claus when I prayed and give me a brand new car, that like in that moment, I realized I was using God in all the wrong ways, and God was ready to help me anytime I was willing, really willing to ask for the right kind of help. And I made that amends, and our relationship got infinitely better. And it's still good today. I mean, it's got its ups and downs. Like, she's got dementia and it's really hard, and there's a lot I can't do for her. And our family's really done a lot to come together. And I've been available as a son and a family member to help my family because of these things. But I wasn't aware that God could be that person until that happened. And I think that's an important part of my story, because whenever I'm faced with a situation where I don't think I can trust God, I pause and I pray and I meditate about that. And I remember that God, like my experience with my God, is that God provides for me the strength and the direction that I lack of myself in order to get through any situation. And even today, like, you know, like I failed a test a couple of years ago and I thought I was going to have to give up my profession. And I talked to my sponsor about it. I talked to other AAs about it. I talked to my boss about it. And what I found in all of that was that if I'm willing to seek God and ask for help from the people around me and trust them, that I can do exactly what it is I need to do rather than running away from it. Well, like, that's my default. Like, I like to run away from things because they're hard to do. And so, you know, even today, like my kids, I got divorced in sobriety and my kids live pretty far away. They're still in driving distance. It's not super far, but it's far enough that there was for a long time early on after the divorce that this fear that we wouldn't have a relationship. I wouldn't be able to have any kind of relationship with them. And the real problem with that was because I wasn't trusting God, is I would show up in front of them and be a bad person, be mean to them, be demanding, you know, like not be a parent. Be another person in their life trying to take something, trying to demand a relationship. And it's, again, through this process and learning to trust God that I learned to trust them, learn to trust them with their relationship with me rather than me expecting them to give me something. And that to me is a huge part of what this is about, is I can't get close to God unless I want to get close to God. And I can't learn to trust God unless I can learn to trust.
Thanks, Grant.
Thanks, Grant.
All right. Continuing on page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there. But above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes. Absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex cause. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiters of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
Yeah, that's a great segue from what I just shared. I often read this paragraph and I think, wow, I have a lot of fear about sex. And I don't just mean about sexual intercourse. I mean, about relating to other people, men and women, and having like intimate thoughts and having had sick or twisted intimate interactions when I was younger. And like, I share this with men all the time. Like, I had an event when I was a kid where I was molested by an older kid, and like, that made me like have all this fear about, am I gay? Am I not gay? Like, and then like, I'd have really bad fear about homosexuals. And then I couldn't get along with people in my life because of it. And then I'd have all this like fear about women because like, am I weird? Is that why this happened to me? And I'd be all hung up on all these. And it's only through a relationship with God that I could overcome these things, that it wasn't any one person's opinion about what sex should look like, what relationships should look like, that would fix this, that I need God's direction to get a straight and narrow path on what I'm going to do going forward and understand the truth about myself. And I had a lot of hangups, like going through college and like, if I can't get what I want, I'm sorry, women, ladies, I was very much an objectifier of women when I was younger. If you weren't giving me something that I wanted, then you're just in my way. And if you are giving me something that I wanted, I wanted more of it. And I had to make a lot of amends. Like I know a lot of people talk about, well, you might cause more harm if you go back and make, I had to make a lot of amends with women that I had harmed when I was out drinking. And some would not hear those amends. Some straight up told me, do not call me. Do not try to get in touch with me. I do not want to hear what you have to say. And some were willing to hear what I had to say and grateful that I was at least kind enough to just say, I know I did you wrong. I know I did some things that made you uncomfortable. Is there any way I can make that right? Right. And so I had to make those amends. And I know we're not talking about the 8-step, but none of this makes any sense if I don't talk about the fact that almost all of this, I had done harm to other people. There's very few instances in my sex inventory where I didn't harm somebody else. I didn't have sex with some other guy's girlfriend. I didn't try to have some sex with some other guy's girlfriend. I didn't ruin somebody's relationship. Like, you know, trying to take advantage of my friend's fiance in the back of his car while he's driving, while I'm intoxicated. Like, these are things I do. Like, not just because I'm drunk. Right. Like I was drunk, but it wasn't just because I was drunk. It was because the drunk was an excuse to do something that I wanted to do anyways, which wasn't right. Right. And I had to go back and make amends to him and make amends to his now wife after the fact. And I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to make those things right, because in doing so, I started to learn to not do these things. Right. I didn't want to be this way. And the only way to grow away from it is to take the action to do something different, right? And to admit that I was wrong and admit that I don't want to behave this way, right? So I'm not, like, when I take guys through this step, I'm not trying to convince them they got to go one direction or another. They have to find in their heart what the truth is about themselves and what they want their relationship with God to be and what they want their relationship with everybody else to be. My first sponsor was real clear when we went through this step that, this is about all relationships. The word sex is in here and it makes me think about one type of relationship, but it's really about how I relate to everybody in my life. And if I'm taking everybody in my life for the value of what I can get out of them, I no longer have a relationship. If I'm taking everybody in my life for what I can provide for them, what I can give and share with them, then we have a relationship. We have even grounds to work. And that's what I have to learn to do. So, you know, I always love this wording because for whatever reason, it just makes me think of the fact that there's not a right path in it, but I do have to overcome the fear about it in order to find the truth for myself. And that's just so valuable to me because I don't have the solution. But when I'm able to look at the fear about it and look at the reality of it and talk to another man, like that's so uncomfortable. I don't know about you guys. It's so uncomfortable to tell another man the things you think about and the things you want to do that are, you know, in your heart seem abnormal. They don't seem right. They seem like a cruel way to treat other people. But when you can say those things honestly, and then that other man says, it's okay. Let's see what we can do to rectify, how to move forward with God. Like in that moment, like you can realize that it doesn't have to hold you hostage. And I was held hostage for so long by insane thinking that was all built out of fear. And I'm so grateful I don't have to live there anymore. I see, I've worked with so many guys who just like, they think they can't get past it. And the truth is if you feel in your heart you need to get past it, then there's a God to fix that. You know, like I used to remember this whole time, all the time. Don't tell God how big your problems are. Tell your problems how big your God is. And this step really exemplifies. Once I lay out all of my problems and realize that if I trust and rely on God, God is bigger than all of these problems that I've created for myself. Fancied or real. Thanks.
Thanks. He has some morals. I didn't have that problem. I didn't have that problem. He had some morals that he fought with. That wasn't my problem. So go back to, I got a fear of being alone, right? So there's always a woman. There's always a bunch of women, right? So in the beginning, I lied about, you know, I don't have another girlfriend. As the time went on, I learned that in my personal experience, that given the option, if a woman's interested, she's going to go. That's my personal experience. I can't say that for everybody. I'm just saying, given the option, woman knows you're married and she's interested, she's going to go wherever you want to go. But again, first wife, I'm cheating on with, you know, a woman from Florida. I never actually cheated on her with a woman up here, but a woman from Florida. And I'm trying to convince that woman in Florida, okay, I'm up here, I'm settled, you know, Trisha's an apartment. Come up here and live with us. You know, that was my thought. You know, I got this disease of more. I want more. So I'm trying to convince her. And, you know, whenever I go on vacation, you know, I go to Florida, I go see her. She puts her boyfriend out while I'm down there. I leave my wife at her parents' house. And 2 weeks later, I'm driving to pick her up to come back up here. And I'm wondering, you know, why that marriage isn't working out well. She's a bad wife, right? And then, you know, the second wife is, you know, the same thing. And the third wife is the same thing. And, you know, if you look at every woman I've dated or married, it's a kaleidoscope. You know, you can't put two of them together and say, oh, that's his style. That's his type. It just doesn't exist for me. You know, I'm whatever's easy and ready to go, I'm ready to do it. And that was just me going back to always ensuring that I'm not going to be alone. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I didn't know that. I thought, you know, I just had, you know, this strong desire to be with a bunch of women. And maybe I did, but it was all centered around that fear, that one little fear that just drove everything. And so there's more in the next paragraph where I can get into it. But if somebody, you know, when I was younger, you know, preteen, teen, had sat me down and said, these are not acceptable ways of doing things, you know, with relationships, maybe I would have done better. I don't know. I mean, but I went on my first date when I was like 10. So, and I've had a girlfriend since elementary school, early in elementary school. So nobody ever said, don't do this. When I had my first kid when I was 15, nobody said, hey, maybe you should, you know, do these things to avoid that. And so I just kept doing what pretending to be a man way before I should have, right? You know, I considered myself grown when I had that first kid, bought a car and had a job. And nobody could tell me anything, but nobody tried to tell me anything either. So, but, and the institution of marriage was, go back to going, I didn't understand what love was. I mean, it was a word to be said at the appropriate time. But I didn't really understand what love was, true unconditional love. I learned that in the Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous from you guys, right? That's where I learned that from, true unconditional love, where, you know, somebody says, call me if you need me. And they actually mean it, right? Like when I tell guys, you know, hey, if you need me, call me. If it's 2 a.m, call me. Do I promise to answer the phone? Hell no. What I will do is if I hear it, I will answer and talk to you. Now, I can't say I would have done that for anybody. Even my own children prior to AA, right? But I can say that honestly now, you know, so, you know, it's no big deal when I volunteer for that phone watch and I get that call because I'm ready to help. I'm ready to show some unconditional love for somebody I don't really know, right? But it took me to get here to learn that so that, you know, the wife number 4 has a different man, a better man, a man that understands love, that understands that sex is just not something you, just a play toy thing, right? And so I will stop there and we'll move on to the next thing.
Okay, yeah, I think I'm gonna mash up two readings and that'll be it for the reading.
Oh man, we're awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it's all good. You guys are rolling. We're gonna continue on page 69. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it.
So I don't have these sex problems I used to have, mainly because I'm aware of that fear of being alone. Also because I've done all the steps and I've achieved a modest amount of peace and serenity in my life where I'm comfortable sitting at home by myself, not thinking I need to be somewhere else or change the way I feel, right? And so because I've achieved that, I'm a better man in the relationship I'm in now. Now for all the other relationships, every single relationship was selfish. Every single relationship was dishonest, right? It doesn't matter that they were well aware of the situation. I was only achieving a goal for myself, right? So did I create the, what was it? I remember a story. Last wife, I used to go to Applebee's at Janif every Friday for years. And I'd be there for 10, 12 hours drinking at the bar. And I'd have women up there with me, right? And the wife was always accusing me of being up there with my girlfriend. And so I was like, maybe figure out which one it is, right? Because I got, you know, I'm inviting every woman I know to show up. So figure out which one it is. But it was all to continue doing the bad behaviors that I was accustomed to doing that I really thought was normal. Most of the guys that I hung out with behaved the same way anyway. So a lot of stuff I did was justified by, well, everybody I hang with drinks the way I drink. Everybody I hang with cheats on their wife or girlfriend the way I do it. So how's it bad when we're all doing it, right? We're all covering for each other. We're all making sure nobody's, you know, got something that's going to get them in trouble. When I get in these rooms and I start learning that, you know, those behaviors, and I really had to learn that those behaviors were bad in these rooms because they were absolutely normal. In the big book somewhere, it says the abnormal becomes the normal. Right? All those behaviors are absolutely normal for me. I grew up with them. I carried them throughout my life, right? And I was 50 when I came in these rooms. So there was nothing truly abnormal about that until I learned it was abnormal, right? And then through these steps, I had that spiritual awakening and I become a different person. And each day, because I take the time to pray, meditate most days, I take the time to work with others. I take the time to be of service to the people in the rooms and in the service center or the safe harbor and the Navy rehab and wherever else I go to be of service to people. Every day I'm learning to be a better person. And as long as I'm a true believer, that as long as I'm continue doing this stuff and I have to keep doing this stuff, that I will continue to improve. I'm not at my perfect point and I'll probably never get there, but the goal is for me to every day try and achieve better in what I'm doing in my life and be a better person towards my wife, my children, and whoever else I, you know, because the anger and all that stuff is gone. So it's easier to be nicer to people, right? I'm through. To be short on time.
So this part where it says, where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? where were we at fault? What should we have done? We got this down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our sex life. I'm going to dispel a rumor. You're not writing that to figure out who the right ideal you are to be married to is. It's how can I live better? And then I'll give you as best I can a short example of this. My ex-wife knew me in drinking, knew me in early sobriety. We had two kids together. She left believing that I had cheated on her at some time after I got sober, which I had not. Say that honestly and with complete security that I did not ever cheat on her. However, this like selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate, I was that. She had two kids at home. I was working, doing my internship, working a lot of hours, coming home, not helping her much with the kids, being difficult when she asked me to help her with the kids. I caused this level of suspicion, bitterness, and jealousy with her that she created this idea that I was cheating on her, because really I was treating her like a wet nurse for my kids and not my partner, not my spouse. Fast forward, I'm remarried. I have a new wife. I have stepkids, and I do all I can to recognize these features in our, I try to inventory it regularly to say, am I taking advantage of her today? Am I expecting her to do more than I'm willing to do? Am I trying to get out of doing something because she'll just do it if I leave it long enough, whether it's the dishes or laundry or getting a kid to practice? Am I having some time off work and not helping out with the family when I could get somebody to and from school? Like, is there some way in which I'm not contributing and I'm taking? And that's what, that to me is the core of this, right? Like, if I'm going to have a sane and sound ideal for my future sex life, I have to be willing to live up to it. Only through God that I can develop that. And I've learned that the hard way. And I think most people do, at least around here. And I'm so grateful that I have a sponsor that helps push me in that direction, right? Because I'm not willing to do it by myself. But when I tell him the truth about it, he's like, let's go this way, keep going this way. And that's what keeps me moving towards this ideal, this sound ideal.
Do the steps with your sponsor, read the book with your sponsor. Yes. I promise you, I guarantee you will change. It's simply impossible not to change.
All right, thank you. Sorry, we're out of time. I'm gonna pass the 7 tradition basket. We got a little Venmo, PayPal, scanning gizmo in here. Let's see, you can sign up for email at our website, simpleactions.net. If you're looking for our PayPal donation, it's Simple Actions, one word, or Venmo is simple-actions. The 7 tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the 7 tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA? Go, John.
Can I do it?
Yeah, go do it.
Okay, Mark Alcoholic. October 1st, District 14, which is Norfolk, is having a picnic. Norfolk hadn't had a picnic in a while. October 1st, 11 to 2, something like that, Northside Park. Everybody's invited. Please come. October 7th through the 9th is the Fall Assembly. If you want to know the business of AA or express your opinion on the business of AA, please go to the assembly. Only your GSRs can vote, but you should definitely go and find out what's going on. We also need help with people on the registration desk if somebody wants to volunteer for that. And November 5th is a gratitude breakfast in this room. That's it.
Thank you. All right. literature is available over yonder. Please see any home group member after the meeting. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available up here at the table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. The meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. If you go down Colonial, if you go to the railroad tracks, you've gone too far. Come back. 22nd, Plaza del Sol. Can we thank our panel one more time? I'd like to thank everyone who participated tonight, for all of you, for your time to be here together. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to say thank you to Mark and Grant. Please come up and shake their hand or stuff like that. And Morgan has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
I'm Morgan, I'm an alcoholic.
Morgan.
This is a vision for you from Big Book Page. Our book is meant to be realized. God will disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation, which you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right. Thank you, guys. How about we come up sort of to the front and maybe make a circle around this table. If it creeps you out holding hands, there's hand sanitizer right outside that door.
Oh, I know.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thy kingdom, power, and glory.
Amen. All right. Thank you so much. Come here.